Blog Talk Radio.
Another good Friday. Hey, everyone, I hope everyone is having themselves a blessed day so far this Friday morning. I just want to say thank you guys for tuning in to Locker Talk, where you can listen directly live on the Bachelor Pad Radio Network, where you'll find out about NFL stars of tomorrow today. I'm your host, Barry Barnes, founder and CEO of Locker-Report.com. And you can always shoot me a message anytime during the course of the show, during the course of the week, at my Twitter handle, Locker_Report, on Facebook, LockerReport.com, on Instagram, where you listen to me live right now, on Instagram at LockerReport100, all low caps, or you can always send me an email directly at BarryBarnes@Locker-Report.com. Now, thank you for everyone that's tuning in, watch me live right now on Instagram. Just want to talk about what happened last week with the NFL. Everything surrounding what's going on with the players of the NFL Regional Combine. And if you're new to the show, this show, if you're looking to hear about other stuff that's going on in the NFL with the main news, who's getting traded, who's going to get cut, who's going to, you know, make the squad, who have, you know, this outstanding season, you're not going to find that on this show. On this show, everything is predicated to the unknown guys, the guys that came through the NFL Regional Combine platform. That's who I specialize in. That's what I specialize in regards to the NFL. So you can look at this show as being the NFL within the NFL. So that's what I'm going to bring on the show. I will talk about what happened last week, and I will preview what's going to happen this week. There's going to be a lot of great things in regards to these guys in the NFL that were once unknown but now starting to become somewhat household names. But I will start with some good NFL news. You know, so if you guys – do have your pens out and paper out and ready, because on this show, my job is to pretty much teach you a lot of good things about the NFL. And we're going actually to start week 8 of the NFL. Some interesting stats, some interesting numbers. There are 6 active quarterbacks currently in the NFL right now. Eli Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, Drew Brees, Phillip Rivers, Aaron Rodgers, and everyone's favorite, Tom Brady. I know I say that real funny, though, but all these quarterbacks right now rank in the top 10 in the NFL in passing touchdowns. Now, the monuments this weekend for this week in regards to certain players. Now, Tom Brady, who right now is one of the 4 quarterbacks with over 500 touchdown passes. Right now, he stands at 504. But if he was to throw 4 touchdown passes this Monday night, he will tie Hall of Fame quarterback Brett Favre with 508. So Tom Brady will be tied 2nd in the NFL amongst touchdown passes in NFL history if he would throw 4 Monday night against the Buffalo Bills. That may be possible, but, of course, before the season is out, he will be number 2 in NFL history. Ben Roethlisberger, right now he has 341 touchdown passes. All he needed is just 2 touchdown passes the past Hall of Fame quarterback, Frank Tarkenton, who had 342. So if Roethlisberger get 2 touchdowns, those 2 touchdown passes this Sunday against the Cleveland Browns, which most likely he probably will, he will be 8th in the all-time touchdown passing list. So there's definitely some gigantic feats there for us throwing touchdowns. Now, another milestone, you know, I do not sleep on kickers. Kickers are a very essential part of the NFL. For a position that always get dogged out, you will never see anyone try to step up and try to do their job. So definitely want to give some kudos out to Adam Vinatieri, longtime kicker playing for the Indianapolis Colts. Right now, currently, he sits at 2,540 points. For his 23-year career, he can pass the all-time scoring leader, Hall of Fame Morton Anderson, who has 2,544 points. All Vinatieri needs is just 5 more points, and if he can get that this weekend, he'll be the, the league's all-time leading scorer. At the age of 45, he's still kicking within 50 yards with no problem. And I wouldn't be surprised if he played for another year or two because he still have a lot of leg left. You know, so that's something to watch out for if you're into kicking. Now, Larry Fitzgerald, right now, wide receiver, you know, he's going to pretty much just walk right into the Hall of Fame. He currently has 15,800 receiving yards through his 15-year career. Now, all he needs is 135 yards receiving against the San Francisco 49ers, and then he will surpass Hall of Fame wide receiver Terrell Owens, who stands at 15,934. And Larry Fitzgerald could be number two, the second most receiving yards in NFL history, second only to the great Jerry Rice himself. Now, Jerry Rice is at 22,000. I don't know if Larry Fitzgerald going to play until he's 41 or 42, but he's very capable enough of doing it because he's keeping himself very healthy. And from being around that facility with the Arizona Cardinals, the way how those guys prepare with their nutrition, that's like the only team in the NFL that actually grow their own products, grow their own fruits, their own vegetables. And they have this water system in that practice facility that is like nothing I have ever tasted before in my life, mixed with vinegar and a whole bunch of other stuff. So the way how that nutrition is set up with the Arizona Cardinals, if Larry Fitzgerald decide to play till he's 41, he very well can do that because of the way how the Cardinals prepare their players and how they emphasize good nutrition. So he is definitely a benefactor of that. So that was a couple of things there just to talk about. And also Frank Gore, who has currently 18,087 career scrimmage yards in the NFL after playing 14 years. Now, if he could total 104 scrimmage yards, actually, he came short last night. All he does need now is just 52 more scrimmage yards, and then he'll surpass Barry Sanders as the sixth most scrimmage yards in the league history. So next week, that's going to have to follow for him to get those yards there. And one other stat of a player that I'm going to talk about later, which the one I'm going to be watching more so than anything, which actually is more important to me, that I will talk about later. So make sure you stay tuned as I break down the preview of Week 8 of the NFL. You listen to Locker Talk, the Catch One Basket Pad Radio Network, where you'll find out about NFL starts of today. Of tomorrow, today. So that's where you'll find out. That's where you can listen to me at. And this is where you're checking me out on Instagram. And I will have it put on the site later on the day to listen to the show again. Now, just to give you that heads up with the NFL, I was going to shoot up to Canada. Because Canada, they have in the CFL, they have several players from the regional combine that are doing very well right now. They're about 2 weeks away from their playoff run. And I want to give a shout out to a guy named Jamar Thurman, who is a linebacker. Who actually playing right now, doing very well up there, and I think he's one of those guys that can eventually bring his talent to the NFL. I think that he's that good of a player. You know, he's definitely solid. So I'm looking forward to seeing he and his team actually with the Calgary Stampeders. If those guys right now they have one of the top records in the CFL, and this guy and this team can continue to win, he may become a great cup champion. And I wouldn't be surprised to see him lining up on someone's NFL roster sometime soon. He's very talented. He came through the Minnesota workouts in 2016. He's a special teams junkie. I thought for sure that was going to be his way in into the NFL. And then worked that way for him right now. But he found a home in the CFL. Is a starter that's playing there. He's eighth in their league in tackles with 76 tackles. His teammate, his name is Alex Singleton, who's very good. He leads the league in tackles for 106. And with him and Thurman, then that core linebackers with that team, that good team that's well on their way to perhaps win a great cup, to know that he's a part of that is a great, great thing. And so that's something I'm proud of him for. Want to see him do very well. He also had his first career interception this year. So looking forward to seeing him continue to do great things. You listen to Locker Talk on the Basket Pad Radio Network, where you can listen to me and see me live on Instagram at Locker Report 100, where you do see that I have a face for television. I'm just on the radio for right now. Know what the Lord may have for me, but give me some good information here where you'll find out about NFL starts of tomorrow today. We're going to take a quick pause. We're going to come back, and then we're going to talk about what happened last week with the players from the NFL Regional Combine and what to look for going into week 8. You listen to Locker Talk.
You know, before Boost, our phone bill was obscene. So we switched to Boost and got lines for the whole family with unlimited gigs for a much more family-friendly price. It's nice to have a phone bill that doesn't require parental controls.
Your family deserves better. Get 4 lines for only $25 per line, each with unlimited gigs. Plus, get up to 4 free Samsung J7 perks with 6 months of Hulu where you can stream all the shows everyone is talking about. All on the super reliable and super fast nationwide network. Boost makes it easy to switch. Switching makes it easy to save.
To talk about. All right. Thanks a lot for tuning back in to Locker Talk on the Bachelor Pad Radio Network, where you can hear about NFL stars of tomorrow, today. And with no further delay, you can always shoot me a message directly on Instagram, where you can see me live right now, where at Locker Report 100 on Twitter, Locker_Report, Facebook, LockerReport.com, or shoot me a message directly through my email at barrybarnes@locker-report.com. All right, here we go. The part that I love to talk about, I even took my glasses off on this one. I don't need to read small print as much on this one. Last week was a great week in the NFL, as usual. And then to see how the guys from the NFL Regional Combine are responding, how these guys are actually starting to take control of their careers and not just happy to be in the NFL, but actually doing something while they're there, making an impact. That's what it's all about when you get that opportunity to play in the league. It's one thing to have the opportunity to make a team's workout. It's another level when you make a team's off-season roster. It's also another level when you get to their preseason. But to actually make it on their roster as a practice squad player, that's pretty amazing. And then when you find yourself on an active roster, where you can actually contribute to a team's success, man, that's better than a lot of things in life. But just want to let you know what these guys are doing right now in the NFL. Now, kicker for the Cardinals, Atlanta Cardinals, Geno Vallitalo. Now, he came through the NFL Regional Combine in 2012 and also did a stint in 2013. He bounced around the league, you know, a couple of teams here and there. But last year he was with the Oakland Raiders. And the Oakland Raiders, when Sebastian Janikowski was pretty much done in Oakland, and before he went to Seattle, and where he's doing very well there as well. But to see Vallitalo be able to hold it down for the Raiders last year, and then to actually see what he was able to do in that first game in week one of last year when the Raiders had to play the Tennessee Titans. He went 5-for-5 in that game. Pretty much won the game for those guys because that was a tight game, tight matchup. So with that being said, this year he was being invited to Atlanta Falcons camp. So I'm going to give you a little context here. So he was there with them during the preseason. Now when Matt Bryan, their longtime kicker, was injured, they needed to bring in a kicker in to see to at least hold the job down until Bryan got himself together, till he healed up. So they brought Geno. He came in with the Falcons, had a solid finale in week 4 of the preseason. So they kept themselves. He actually kept himself on their radar to actually be a solid kicker down the road. Now Matt Bryan came back, everything was fine. But in week 6, that's when he had injured his hamstring, so they need an emergency kicker. All right, let's go to the person that helped them during the preseason. And they went back to Geno, brought him back, and signed him pretty much about a week ago on the team, got activated, and was ready to go for the New York Giants this Monday night. Now, those who saw that game, you saw that, whether it was poor defense or if it was good defense or vice versa, whatever the case may be, Atlanta needed every point they could possibly get in that game in order to beat the New York Giants. And Geno stepping up to the plate. So it was really great to see that. I do have a face for television in LA. I just saw that. But Geno stepped up to the plate, and he went 3-for-3 in his field goal, including the game-sealing field goal with 2 minutes left. The way how this game was going on, that Monday night game, if you saw the game, you'll understand what was going on. Now, Matt Ryan was having a hard time moving the ball down the field. And the Giants' defense was in a desperate situation, knowing that if they didn't get the ball back, there was a good chance that the Giants probably could have pulled this game off, because the momentum kind of swung in their direction for them to get that last touchdown. So it was almost like a desperate situation for Atlanta to win this game. And so what Dan Quinn went for, he said, oh, let's put our kicker out there. Let's see what he can do to really ice this game to make it a two-possession game for the Atlanta, for the Giants, knowing there was less than 2 minutes left in this game. So he lined them up for a 56-yard field goal. And I tell you, without a doubt, came in, stepped in, put his foot into it. If he needed to go 60 yards, he probably would have made that. So he nailed that field goal. It's initially pretty much won the game for Atlanta, knowing the way how the tide was turning, so to speak, in that game, how the momentum was starting to shift to the New York Giants. And to see that he was able to step up, kick that 56-yard field goal to ice that game with 2 minutes left, that was a major, major accomplishment. And it also may have helped Atlanta stay alive in that division, because Atlanta right now, they're looking up to the Saints. They're looking up to the Panthers. And although the Bucs did pull off a tight one, we never know what's going to happen with them. So right now, currently, the Atlanta Falcons are last in their division at 3-4. But the division is still a long season. Right now, Atlanta do have the best record of their division at 2-1. So that is some kind of caveat they can take away from Monday night's game. So these guys, so that win Monday night kind of helped them stay the course, so to speak. Not saying they're going to make the playoffs, not saying they're going to go to the Super Bowl, but at least will help them be competitive throughout the rest of their division. So that's where that win came from, and this could be one of those wins that Atlanta can look at and say, hey, this game helped us stay competitive. So that's what Geno was able to do. So congrats to him to actually be able to make that field goal to help not only make himself a better name or a stronger name, but at the same time keep himself on the radar for a team that may need a kicker, because he's definitely a good kicker to hire if need be. Now we're going to shift our gears to the Indianapolis Colts. Now we're Kenny Moore, the second-year man, came through the NFL Regional Combine platform last year, made himself a starter for the Indianapolis Colts. He actually started the last five games the last season to close out the 2017 season. But now he started with the Colts, having a phenomenal season this year. And this week when they played against the Buffalo Bills, he was the one that essentially injured LeSean McCoy. Now, I'm not saying he was trying to hurt him, but he was the one that hit LeSean McCoy really hard to make him go out of bounds, where McCoy actually had hit his head on the ground and had to, be taken out of the game before a concussion. But Kenny Moore just showing how I would say, I didn't say violent, but how physical he is, how aggressive he is, and it shows with his play. He do have decent hands, but he's a playmaker that wanted to make the hit. And in that game last week against the Buffalo Bills, he finished second on the team with seven tackles, a DB out there throwing his body around, and he also was able to get an interception in that game as well. So he had a solid game across the board. The Colts are one of those teams that plays hard. They play very good during the first three quarters, but they just had to find a way to actually bring it in in the fourth quarter to actually seal it. They dominated the Bills last week. Knowing they have Andrew Luck back, I think this team will start to find themselves as the season progresses. And I think knowing that Kenny Moore is there, and also Chris Milton, another player that came through the platform, with those guys in the secondary, I think the Colts really gonna have something special there. And then also you have Denzel Good, who's a left guard on that team, on offensive line, in and out of the lineup. But he's really showing, how good he is as a draft pick that was drafted back in 2016 by the Colts in the seventh round. And see that he's still doing well, holding on to that spot. It's a great, great thing that he's able to do and to accomplish. You're listening to Locker Talk on the Bachelor Pad Radio Network, where you'll find out about NFL stars of tomorrow, today. Now, we're going to shift into Chicago. Now, last week I talked about how Roy Robinson Harris, the defensive tackle of Chicago Bears, going to have an opportunity to get to Tom Brady. Now, fortunately, he didn't get his hands on Tom Brady, but he still was impactful in that game. And also did put enough pressure on Brady for Brady to actually throw that interception. Now, this interception actually came in the fourth quarter with 6 minutes and 31 seconds left. Brady took the ball from snap underneath the center, dropped back, but he couldn't drop back too long because that's when you saw Harris just bulldoze his way right up in front of Tom Brady. And if he takes pressure coming up the middle, that will make him uncomfortable, which will make any quarterback in the NFL uncomfortable when you have someone that's as fast as him, as big as him coming at you. If I was a quarterback in the league, I wouldn't want that to happen. It would make me rattle. But there's some quarterbacks that hated them that don't like it more than others, and Tom is one of those guys. And so as soon as Harris came right up the middle, trying to get to Tom Brady threw the ball a little early to his fullback, to Devlin, who kind of bobbled the ball. It was still a catchable ball. It was still right in his clutches, but he bobbled it, and that's when it came out, and that's when you seen Kyle Fuller pick the ball off, put an interception to get that turnover. The Bears did make it interesting, however, with a Hail Mary that was a 1 yard short to at least force the game into overtime. But I want to shout out that Harris wasn't impactful in that game, put pressure on Tom Brady up the middle, and that was something that he was able to see what Brady was able to do. Allen Cross, tight end for the Tampa Bay Bucs, caught his first pass of the season. The Bucs actually shipped him from fullback to a tight end because that's his natural position. Although he stands 6'1", but when he was in Memphis, he actually holds the career record of touchdowns for tight ends at Memphis University with 11. And so they moved him back to his natural position. He caught his first pass this year for 6 yards in that game that they had won over the Cleveland Browns. Now, Elijah Penny, fullback for the New York Giants, who just joined the New York Giants about a month ago, he got his first carry this season for 2 yards in that Monday night game. Now, another player that was from the NFL Reason platform, Brian Zistra, who's a wide receiver for the Vikings, he caught his first NFL pass. He actually had an opportunity right after 2016, after he came through the regional combine platform, to go to the Canadian League and play for the Edmonton and played there for 1 year, came to the NFL, made that transition, made the team with the Vikings, and he caught his first NFL pass last week for 23 yards. So that was a great monumental for him to get that monkey off his back to finally get a chance to catch a pass. Now, sticking with Brandon is going to lead me right into what's going to happen this week for the biggest record that I'm looking for most of all, and that's with Adam Thielen. Adam Thielen came through the NFL Regional Combine. You heard me talk about this young man for the past couple of weeks now, and because each week it built up to something great for what Thielen is able to do. Thielen right now is tied for the first 7 games of the season, to start the season, to have over 100 yards receiving. So right now he is tied with Charlie Hannigan, who was with the Houston Oilers, now the Tennessee Titans. In 1961, Charlie was able to start the first 7 games with 100 yards or more. Adam Thielen tied him last week against when they played the New York Giants. And that play actually came about when he was able to draw in the pass late in the fourth quarter for 21 yards, where he was able to eclipse that 100 mark where he was trying to get to. Now, he tied it. Now, if he is able to get 100 yards against the Saints this Sunday night, then he'll be the sole person in NFL history to start the first 8 games with 100 receiving yards. He'll be not only just the first one in NFL history altogether. At first, he was just the first one to do it during that Super Bowl modern era. But right now, if he get 100 yards against the Saints Sunday night, he will be the sole person in NFL history to start the first 8 games with over 100 yards receiving. So this is going to be a really, really good thing to watch out for. Also, if he do get over 100 yards Sunday against the Saints, not only will he own that particular record, but he'll be tied with who I believe future Hall of Famer Calvin Johnson. Calvin Johnson was the first person in NFL history to at least have 8 games at any point during the season with over 100 yards. If Adam Thielen get over 100 yards this Sunday night, he will tie Calvin Johnson for the 8 consecutive games with 100 yards receiving. So that's something to watch out for. Now, a little bit of context with the Saints. The Saints are a good team, especially situationally. So situationally, that's where you see the Saints play their best ball. But when you look at their stats, they rank 18th in the league in total defense. But they rank 28th in the league in passing defense. So what that tells you, it's a good chance that Adam will own that record this Sunday and also tie Calvin Johnson as well. So that is something to watch out for with Adam Thielen and the Minnesota Vikings. And also it's going to be pretty much the game of the week to watch that particular game to see what the Saints and what the Vikings can do. So this is somewhat like a revenge game of last year's semifinals round, divisional round, where the Saints pretty much were the better team on the field, but then Minnesota miracle with Stephon Diggs killed it. So you're going to really see that Sean Payton is really going to try to go after these guys Sunday night. But during this game, that's when you will see Adam Thielen. The spotlight is going to be on him. And just remember, coming through the NFL regional combines, most of the guys that you see, matter of fact, all the guys you have that do the network really don't know his story. They should know it by now because it was told last year. But just to let you know, he came from that small platform from the NFL regional combine where he was unknown. And if he didn't come to that platform, it's a good chance we all would have never known who Adam Thielen is. He's a great player for this league, a solid player for Minnesota, and to know that he's one of the ambassadors, one of the pioneers of the NFL regional combine to help get the regional combine and show his worth and his value, along with a couple of his other teammates. So then Brandon, who I talked about, Sasha, he came through there, and also fullback C.J. Ham, who is one of those fullbacks that actually catch the ball very well. This year, with C.J., he was able to catch the ball 8 times for 61 yards, and he had a couple of carries that, you know, 2 carries for 6 yards. Yeah, so he's pretty much that, I would say, that bell cow they go for when they need that tough 1 yard long, 1 yard run just to get that first down. That's where he come in at. So this team here, these three guys can do something that this platform have never seen before. And I said at the beginning of the show that not only do we have someone from the regional combine to make history, which will be Adam Thielen, which I have no doubt that he will Sunday night, but this will be the first time that this platform will have three players at the same time on the field. Now, the New York Giants was close last week because they had three offensive players on their lineup from the regional combine. And as I always say about Elijah Penny, then they got Scott Simpson, and then they have another player, Burrell Davis, from Bethune-Cookman, who's a rookie wide receiver. He's normally primarily on that kickoff return, but as I watched that game in Monterton, I was hoping to see that all three of those guys got on the field at one time, which was a major monument, you know, for that platform to have that many group of players from a platform that discover unknown talent to be on a professional NFL team. That was major, but they did not get a chance to do that. This Sunday night can be one of those situations where the platform would definitely be, you know, highlighted. You know, they had three guys in Thielen, and then you have Sestra, and then you also have Ham. So I will be watching out to see if those three guys were on the field at the same time, because, of course, I'm going to talk about it. I'm going to blow it up. I'm going to write about it, because that's an amazing event if that was to happen. So that's something I want to watch out for, you guys to watch out too. Now, also, back to a kicker, came through the platform. The Denver Broncos going to have their hands full again with the Kansas City Chiefs. Based off a poor decision and a bad pass, the Chiefs should be at 2 losses right now. And the Broncos pretty much laid out a way how to beat the Chiefs. But one of the things they definitely need to beat the Chiefs are points. And one of the things they have in that back pocket is one of their kickers, Brandon McManus. Along with Josh Lobo, who's a kicker for the Jacksonville Jaguars, Brandon McManus did not miss a field goal this season, did not miss an extra point. So he's perfect on the season. They're the only two kickers in the league that's perfect on the season. And that's something that McManus needs to be on Sunday to be perfect if the Broncos will have opportunity to beat the Chiefs. Now, that's pretty much a great solid breakdown of what's going to happen in reviewing-wise for week 8 in the NFL, only regarding the NFL regional combine players. My time is up for this week. I will be back to talk about more about what these guys are going to do next week. But I'm coming up on my mid-season report, and also ready. I'm coming up on my NFL officiating report for the second quarter of the season. I will do a breakdown of how the officials are doing in that situation. so that you see how these guys really use their defensive emphasis. And there were several situations where the defensive emphasis has been used. Last night was one of those games with the situations with the Texans and the Miami Dolphins when the punter, well, actually when the center got hit, and everybody was wondering why why they were penalized penalized to the Texans when they hit the center when he snapped the ball. One of the points of emphasis is not to hit the center when they snap the ball. They cannot be touched because they don't want to risk anything as far as any neck injury or head injury. So that's why that play was called as a foul and why Miami was able to continue to have the ball and score in the next play. But I'll break that stuff down when I talk about the officials. Thanks a lot for tuning in to Locker Talk. I'm your host, Barry Barnes, founder and CEO of Locker-Report.com. Shoot me a message anytime on my email, Barry Barnes at Locker-Report, or Instagram, Locker-Report100, on Twitter, Locker_Report, or on Facebook, Locker-Report.com. Everyone stay blessed. Talk to you next week. Peace.
And good evening. Welcome to another edition of The Pad. Thank you for joining us as always. It's L.A. Bachelor. It is The Bachelor Pad Show. Different time on Tuesdays now, following the Donaldson Files from 7 to 8 p.m. or and beyond Eastern Time. We thank you for joining us as always. Thanks to all those who are following us. And we appreciate you checking in wherever you are. 646-929-0130, the number to get in touch with us. Press 1 to get on the line. I want to go right to the phones and bring in my good friend from BASN, the newsroom, and, of course, the Bachelor Pad Show. He's Tony T. Mac McLean. And, T, what's going on, man?
Hurry up, hurry up. The game starts in an hour. Let's go, let's go. Let's go.
You would say that, the baseball junkie that you are, even in the honesty that you talk about with racism there, you still are a fan. Before we get to the World Series, I do want to sort of recap the AL and NLCS series. Start with the American League. I think we both had Houston going back to the World Series. We thought that their starting pitching was just as good, if not better, and their bullpen. And they've been there. The lineup, you know, the clutch hitting. What went wrong with Houston in the Boston series?
You have to give when you can go in and win three games in Houston, that says a lot. You know, when you go into somebody else's place and beat them the way that they did, even if you want to, moan about the fan interference, man, that's one game. That's one game. They still lose the series 4-2, if that's the case, if you want to give them that one game. But Boston, I mean, just like we saw in the Yankee series, Boston was better. We have to – look, those 108 wins were not a fluke. And I think they have been under the microscope since the postseason started, and they've passed every test. You have to give Boston credit. I was happy for David Price to finally get all the naysayers off his back. We'll see what winds up happening, I guess, tomorrow. He's pitching game two. But, the Red Sox bullpen, which I guess was a weakness most of the year, they came through when they had to. They came through when they had to in this series.
Yeah, I get that, but when they go into it's pretty hard to go into Houston and win three straight games. I thought some matchups didn't make sense either. I thought some matchups were better for Boston. At least they won those matchups. And talk about how big it is. When, especially in this day and age, we'll get back to that in a second, but how these relievers come in, and based on the analytics, they come in and they're in the fifth, a pitcher goes 4 2/3, and here comes a reliever, and they go 2/3 or whatever. And it's all about the matchups. We see it in football a lot, and even basketball in the half court, but now you see it more from the analytics side in baseball.
And I'm still, I'm an old school guy. I'm still not quite. I mean, I get having the great bullpen, but when you're, it just brings a lot of micromanaging. And I think there was more of that in the National League series than there was in the American League. I think Hinch, for the most part, he had his little moments as well. The probably the biggest two at bats of this series were by Jackie Bradley Jr. because you look at game two in Boston when they could have gone down 0-2. He hit the bases loaded triple to break open the game. He had the grand slam in game four, and then he had the big hit as well in game five. So the lower part, they really. The big name guys, with the exception of Martinez, really haven't hit for Boston. It's the lower part of the lineup has been hitting for them, and Bradley especially. Now, Now they'll be able to play the DH the first two games. Martinez is going to DH tonight, and Matt Kemp's going to DH for the Dodgers. But that's going to be those swing games in LA are going to have a big bearing, because who in that outfield are you going to sit to put JD Martinez in? And they've been going back and forth as well at first base with Moreland, who was playing with sort of a bad leg, and Pierce, who's been hitting the ball as well. So they've got some interesting that there's going to be even more matchups in this series. But again, to piggyback on the ALCS, Boston's bullpen came through, and most importantly, they just got every timely hit that was needed. They got, and let's face it, the Astros, whether it was Altuve or Bregman or Correa, and even George Springer, who was hitting the hell out of the ball, they were non-factors in this series.
Yeah, and I think it's fitting, and I think it's a good thing that Jackie Bradley Jr. and some of the other black ball players on Boston got it done. I don't know what the Boston media is saying about that, T, but that grand slam, I think, was the turning point. What's the turning point in the series to you? I think that
the
game was there and he hit that, I think that the momentum was gone there for Houston.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, because see, game, you were just coming off of a swing game. And if you get out of that, you got a chance to tie that series at 2-2. But when when he hits the slam, it's like, and again, this is what they brought Osuna over for in Toronto. And he gives up a freaking moonshot, and for all intents and purposes, even though they played right up until the last out in the last game. But, yeah, to me, the series, the momentum shift was huge with that granny.
Talking with Tony T-Mac McLean on the pad. T, how big is it for David Price to do something in this series? I mean, 0-10 is it now? His ERA is almost 7? How big is it for him, for his career at least?
At least now they won't mess with him. They won't mess with him until tomorrow night. He at least can keep him at a hands off distance. But I think when you've been as successful as he has been, and let's face it, there's still Boston fans that would like to see him go, even as successful as he has been there. But he needed that one badly. And that's the only thing about it I was happy for in regards to Boston and Joey Cora as well. Joey Cora has pushed every button right this year. And when you realize the kind of scrutiny that he's under being a Hispanic manager in Boston, that's huge.
Yeah, I think the way he's handled Porcello, the way he's kind of went to bat for David Price, and he pushed a lot of good buttons is huge for them. It switched to the National League, and I almost think like Milwaukee peaked too fast, all those wins they had, and even when Clayton Kershaw struggling early and getting a W again, the Dodgers show that they can hit when they needed to. They certainly play good defense and they can pitch. But what happened with Milwaukee? Did they peak too soon, or they just, their so-called MVP didn't really play up to par either?
That, and I think Craig Counsell micromanaged himself out of the series. And I will, use the last game in L.A. for when you're bringing in a guy to pitch to start a game and pitching him for one batter, that's just too much analytics. It's just way, way too much. he micromanaged himself out of the series. And to be quite honest with you, Game 7 was a perfect example. He went with Hader. I thought he went with Hader too soon because the key moment of the game, Hader was already out, and they did the Dodgers a favor. And the thing is, when you do all that specialized stuff and bring in the opener and what have you, it taxes your bullpen. And I think it just came. I just think it came down to where by the time they had to really get a big out, they were already gassed. Now, and let's face it. Also, Yelich, Kane, all their big time guys did not come through. It's funny because with all the four final teams, none of the big name guys actually hit. Yelich got the home run in Game 6, and then Puig clinched the series with the home run in Game 7. But all the marquee guys really didn't. I think cumulatively maybe only had about 10 hits between them. But it was the lesser known guys. It was the sort of the Jackie Bradleys and the Bellingers of the world that actually got the big hits, and David Fries as well for the Dodgers, showing you his postseason pedigree as well.
Yeah, I was going to say David Fries has been doing this for a minute, so, hey, but I get you to not known. Now, certainly Jackie Bradley, would Boston fans, if they're honest, would say that he's been doing that, for them, coming up with some big hits and some big plays. For them, again, I'm not trying to say it's all on Clayton Kershaw, but here you are again on the biggest stage. He's got to set the tone to me, T. He's got to set the tone. He comes out and pitches, 6 1/3, 7, gives up one run, strikes out 8, something like that. Then that sets the tone for this series. That's not to say that Boston can't come back and win it. Obviously, they did. Lost Game 2 to Houston. But he's got to come out and pitch well to show Dodger fans and Boston that, this is, if you're going to win it, we're going to take you down. And it won't be because of me losing it.
Mm-hmm. And it's twofold. If basically, the Dodgers treat him, they try to say him basically in the same breath as some of their all-time greats, Koufax.
Sandy Koufax. Not Koufax.
He's not even, let's face it, in the postseason, he hasn't even been Don Sutton or Bert Hooten, to be quite honest.
Right.
He's struggled. He's had his ups and downs and whatever. But, let's face it. There's still rumors that he may walk after this year. He's got an option coming up. So if he decides to leave LA, he's gonna have to show somebody. I mean, he's gonna get paid either way, but you wanna make it so that all you gotta do is just say here, where they come to you and say name your price. Now he's gonna get because he's Clayton Kershaw, he's gonna get a certain amount of money, a certain amount of respect anyway. But let's face it, you could put a stamp on that thing if you come out and say win a couple of games in this World Series. And like you said, show a, dare I say it, Koufax-like performance, especially in Boston.
Right. One of the storylines, and there are many, of course, but one of the storylines in this, and I was talking with someone who was really thinking about this, is the Machado-Boston thing. We know Machado and Boston's had fights. They've hit them. There's been a lot of bad blood going back years when, obviously, most recently, not even, he just came to the Dodgers from Baltimore, so it's been going on for a while. Do you think any of that, even the class of Alex Cora, will play into this with him and how they pitch to him? Are they going to go after him physically and really try to attack him?
If the biggest mistake they could do is to try and go after him. I mean,
because they can't intimidate him. They can't intimidate him.
No. Look, everybody's going to try to pitch him inside anyway. So my and again, it's the World Series. And look, I get it. You know, y'all been having hissy fits the last 3-4 years as well. But I think if they want to turn this into a hissy fight, I think the Dodgers win this series easily. And as you were saying, it would be out of character for this Red Sox team, because they just go out and play. They don't, you know, you very rarely see them, you know, dabble in all the BS. They, you know, because I look at it like this. If it was the Yankees series, if it was them against the Yankees, I would be like, okay, yeah, they may try to get nasty and ugly with them. But I think because it's the World Series, and Machado is just, he's really the only guy that is the quote-unquote villain, although I'm sure before the week is over with that all of a sudden Puig will become a villain. As well. But yep. if put it this way, if they want to play that, you know, we're going to go after him mentality, then I think the Dodgers will come close to putting the broom to him. I'm still back and forth as to who I think will win. I'd like to see Dave Roberts get his ring, you know, or get his managerial ring. Not to take anything away from what Corey has done. And, you know, it's interesting, and I wrote as such, you know, when I did the preview. This is the first basically all-minority managerial World Series. This is the first time we've had two minorities manage the World Series. You know, we got Roberts, yeah, of course, who is half black and half Japanese. And, of course, Cora, he's the first Puerto Rican-born manager to manage in the thing. Of course, you know, Ozzie Guillen, the first Hispanic to win it,
right,
know, a few years back with the White Sox. But with that all being said, and the overhype it's going to get because it's two blue blood franchises, this has to make it to be a pretty decent series. I'm gonna say Dodgers in seven, but it's
that means,
you know,
they got to win in Boston. They got to win in Boston.
Well, I think both teams can win a game at the other team's park. I think the Dodgers, look, the Dodgers went in and won two in Milwaukee. So who's to say that they can't win maybe one or possibly two in Boston?
Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it'll be interesting to see if they can pull that off. You know who I'm rooting for, so that's not even.
Yeah. I got my
guess. That's a given. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it should be a fun series.
Who do you think it would be the quickly before we go HBCU real quick, who do you think will be sort of the standout in this series to make the difference?
I'm going to say Turner. I think Turner is really good. I think because he's been, he's been one of these guys that's done well in the postseason. I think if the Dodgers are going to win, he's going to have a couple. I think he's going to have a few big hits along the way there.
And let's not – people talk about – moving on to HBCU. People talk about, you know, the lineup Boston has and the poise and stuff. That's a veteran Dodger lineup as well. You know, they got some guys who have been either with the organization and been in the playoffs or been in these situations before. So – you know, I really think it's going to come down to how far teams can go. And we'll recap tomorrow how far pitchers can go. And I don't want to get into the analytics. I know you and I feel the same way and how they know.
Put it this way. I don't think it will be as much of an analytic series as these last two series were. I think you'll see certain aspects of it, but I don't think it'll be overblown like we saw in both the series. I think I get the feeling we'll see more traditional types of moves and stuff in this series.
Mm. Turn to HBCU. We're talking with Tony T. Mac McLean here on the pad. HBCU, some games, some interesting scores. Starting with, I want to start with Winston-Salem State homecoming, getting it done, a senior day. where is this program going? They're certainly not the same Rams that we were around. But you know they get a win they should get. Where is this program going moving forward under this coaching regime?
Well, they basically have it right in front of them right now. This was their last home game this past Saturday. So now they host Shaw for Shaw's homecoming this Saturday, and then by all intents and purposes, the Southern Division is going to come down to them in Fayetteville State. Now, Fayetteville came in Now, Fayetteville came down there last year and ruined their party and wound up getting to the championship game. So it's going to come down to that. But I think the difference this year is that Fayetteville, because they've had, they sort of stumbled into it last year. And I know the Fayetteville State fans are already cussing me out when I say that. But this year, they come in established. They've won four in a row. They're peaking right now. So basically, if Fayetteville wins out, they're going to earn it. Either team's going to earn it, but I think it would be more satisfying for Fayetteville even more this year, because I think last year, like I said, they sort of stumbled on everybody and won it. This year, I think if they win their next two, then they definitely earned the right. But it's going to be tough to beat Bowie this year. It really is. I think Bowie is on a little bit of a mission, because They want. I think for Bowie,
that's an impressive win going into Richmond and getting that win. That was an impressive. It was an emphatic win too. Like they were very physical.
Well, the thing is, last year they were the number one offense in the country last year, and so you knew that coming back, there was going to be a little bit of a bullseye on their chest. And it showed, because this year they haven't put out as many points, but they've been more efficient. And Saturday's game was a perfect example of that. And, what usually winds up happening with a team like that, the defense gets no love because everybody gets caught up in the offense. But their defense has been very solid the last 2 weeks. Matter of fact, I think they played their best game defensively this past Saturday, because Union's no joke. With that Taylor and Taylor backfield, you got to deal with some stuff there. So the fact that they were able to go in and win rather convincingly, that shows a lot. And they've been let's face it, even with the upset win at upset loss at Chouan, they've been the class of the league this year, and they've shown it.
How much do we make into the Virginia State win over Lincoln? With all due respect to Lincoln, it's Lincoln.
Yeah.
But 54-7, it's homecoming. So, how much do we make into Virginia State at this point?
No. You give them the. I mean, if you play a bad team like that, you're supposed to beat them like that. They and Union are going to need a lot of help. I still think the Union State game will still be an important game in regards to the playoffs, because the first regional rankings came out today, and there are five HBCU teams in the top 10. And matter of fact, the top 8 get in. So as of right now, I believe I had it in front of me here. At this right now, Bowie is number 5, and then you got Morehouse at 7, and then a Union at 8. So three of those, and then you've got Tuskegee and Albany State are the other two teams in that top 10. So State's trying to, State wants to try to get back in the playoff if they can. So even if they're not playing for the league title or the division title, it's still going to be a big game, because, there's a possibility that you could get multiple teams from the CIAA and possibly the SIAC this year.
and that would be pretty awesome. Talking with Tony T. Mac McLean on the pad, some HBCUs. Mr. Freese, I do see you on the line. I'll be getting to you shortly, sir. Tony, there's a couple of conferences that I don't understand. It's been total helter-skelter. The SEAC, the SIAC, and, of course, the MEAC. You mentioned Albany State. You mentioned Tuskegee. Albany State, you know, gets a big win after struggling. Morehouse and Clark, I don't know, especially Morehouse, they get a win, but they lost the week before, you know, and we mentioned, you know, with Tuskegee. What's going on in that conference? And then A&T beats up on Bethune. Central knocks off Norfolk. I mean, it's just no rhyme or reason. Is it parity or just teams not being prepared in both those conferences?
It's parity, but see, also, and I know the MEAC won't like me to say this, but no Hampton. So it's an imbalance. See, you got two conferences dealing with imbalance this year. The CIAA is dealing with imbalance because of the games that were messed up because of the hurricane, games that were canceled or postponed because of the hurricane. So, you know, instead of using a 7-game criteria like they used before, it's a 6-game criteria. Now, with the MEAC, by all rights, A&T should have two conference losses. You know, they lost to Morgan State, but that was one of those designated non-conference games because of the imbalanced schedule. So they're still in it. Now, I believe you basically have got four teams with one loss. So, you know, I'm sorry, it was six teams with one loss going into this weekend. I'm going into last weekend, I'm sorry. Now it's down to three. Howard's got one loss, A&T's got one loss, and Central's got one loss. And, of course, you know, FAMU is still the only unbeaten team. So now – I think it was 3 years ago where you had the 5-way tie and Morgan wound up getting in. I think Morgan got in the 1AA's because of some tiebreaker or what have you. It's setting up for what could be kind of a quirky final as well, but neither one of the four remaining contenders has a easy schedule along the way, and there's always at least one or two ridiculous upsets in the MEAC every year. You know, we saw, I think if I remember correctly, a couple of years ago, Morgan knocked off A&T when A&T had a chance to run the table. And let's put it this way: there's still a couple of homecoming games that are out there. Now, we talked about Morgan. Now, Morgan goes to Tallahassee this weekend.
Right.
I'm saying,
I want to hold that. When we preview and stuff. But Howard, as you mentioned, beat Morgan State. You know, in,
and
at
Morgan,
home
and Morgan gave,
by
Morgan
nine.
Gave him a game. Morgan gave him a game.
Yeah, they did. They did. Final question for you with the before I let you go. Emotional games I want to talk about real quick. Tennessee State gets a win against Tennessee Tech. You know, the situation with this young man is, you know, obviously through the blessings of God, are getting better out of the hospital, moved back to Nashville from Atlanta, from that hospital. Emotion and emotions when you look at the situation there in and the game just slipped my screen.
Was the MEAC game?
Well, the
Well, let's talk about – we'll talk about the Tennessee State-Tennessee Tech game and how that affects these kids, you know, to play under those circumstances, knowing that one of your teammates is down. That's got to be big for them to get that win.
And it's homecoming. And see, people – you know, we sort of poo-poo homecoming a lot of times, too, because it's supposed to be, you know, because the teams that we're usually playing are supposed to be teams that are supposed to, you know, well, walk over them. But you know, when you realize what that community has been going through with Abercrombie and how the NCAA tried to basically pull a pimp move on them in regards to the whole you fund me thing, I think there was a lot going on that weekend, and I think that's why I think it made that win all the more sweeter for them, because they've been, you know, when you see one of your, you know, when you see one of your soldiers go down, it's tough. And see, they're still, yes they are quote unquote men, but they're young men. They're still kids. So this is the type of stuff that they're going through now are life lessons that will last them for the rest of their lives. You know, because when you're in college, that's that first step away from being on your own and away from family, just with friends, and you're really trying to, a lot of what you do and what you establish in those days and nights will dictate, you know, what kind of person you can or you can be down the road. So I was very,
and then,
I was very happy.
Yeah, I was very inspired by it too. And then 60 seconds are left. FAMU is the other one. The fact that where they are right now, where they were, where they had the whole hazing situation with the deaf there. You talk about a lot how that program needs to come back. I'm not saying they are back, but they are in a good position. That football program, that's got to be emotional too. It's got to be some form of emotions going on there.
Sure. I mean, look, FAM, you know, FAMU is you know, we talked about how the Dodgers and Red Sox are blue bloods in Major League Baseball. FAMU is a blue blood for HBCU football. There's FAMU has the same great history as Grambling, as Morgan, as Southern, you know, for Christ's sake, you know, Jake Gaither, Jimmy, Billy Joe, not to mention the great Hall of Famers that have come from there. So kids realize the legacy. And to be quite honest, that's one of the reasons why they brought Willie Simmons there, because he's a Florida native. So he knows the territory. And so far, so good.
Yeah, they look really good. T, you can hang on the line if you'd like. I appreciate the time, as always. As a matter of fact, if you want to check out Tony's work on BASN Newsroom, you can go there. And soon to be his articles and everything on the BasketPad Network, our website as well. We will preview the weekend in Black College Football this coming Thursday. And recap, of course, MLB baseball as well, and some other topics. We'll take a 30-second break, come back with Larry Freese. He's a veteran broadcaster and host of the Larry Freese Show, a Freedom Voice on the Path. Stay tuned.